Thank you. Be seated. Justice Spector will not take part in the consideration of this case. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Friesenhahn v. Ryan.
Is the court, Mr. Ross, welcome to the argument
from petitioner? Petitioner deserves 5 minutes to rebuttal. Honorable Justices, the trial court in this matter, Judge Spector, correctly determined that there was no duty owed to the plaintiffs who were the respondents before this court. Based upon that correct finding, she entered summary judgment on behalf of my clients. The San Antonio Court of Appeals reversed that summary judgment, basically attempting to carve out two new duties that did not exist, both of which I believe, one of which clearly, the other most probably in conflict with this court's ruling in the Graff versus Beard case. The San Antonio Court, in their opinion, I believe, attempted to say that while there is no social host liability where we're dealing among all adults, where there's a minor involved, in this case the injured party was a minor, the injured party was the drinker, that in some way that would present either some exception or some new doctrine of social host liability where one had previously not existed. Additionally, in a matter that was raised for the first time in oral argument at the Court of Appeals, the San Antonio court said that there could be a cause of action for negligence per se based upon a violation of the Alcoholic Beverage Commission. I want to review the reasons why I believe both of the statements by the San Antonio court are in contravention of this court's rulings, why no such duties do exist, can exist, either under the facts of this case. As a matter of law, there would be no evidence to support those duties, but in a broader sense that just generally, based upon sound propositions of law, those duties should not exist. Taking
Mr. Crossland, shouldn't the trial court have at least given the plaintiff an opportunity to amend after she sustained her special exceptions?
Your Honor, there were two reasons I think that did not occur. One was the pleading abatement was done to allow this court to address Graff versus Beard. No one knew what level of duty, if any, might come out of this court on social host. In fact, there was none, so there's nothing to replead. And additionally, with regard to alcoholic beverage code positions, nothing ever prevented the plaintiffs from pleading that. In fact, they pleaded alcoholic beverage code violations against the retail defendants that were in the case at the time.
But they never pled that your client served the alcohol to the minor.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And how are we to assume that they could not have pled that if they had been given the full time to replead?
Your Honor, perhaps they could have pled it, but the summary judgment evidence before the trial court, which is unrefuted, the deposition excerpt testimony of Eric Johnson on page 34, he says, and it was not refuted, that my client did not serve or provide the alcohol, that the theory was one step further removed from actually having provided.
So it doesn't make any difference that they weren't given the full time to replead?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't believe there's anything they could have pled. There's not a duty they could have pled based on the laws that came out of Graff versus Beard plus the evidence that was before Judge Spector at the time.
And that was because even if they did plead that they served the minor alcohol, you're saying there's no duty?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's in addition, that would be moot to even have been able to replead that. There would still not be a social host duty simply by virtue of changing the individual status from an adult to a minor. And in addition, in this case, bear in mind that the injured party is not an innocent third party. We have, in fact, the drinker here as the party who was injured.
Let me see if I can flesh this out. I'm confused. Special exceptions were granted.
Yes, Your Honor.
But before there was an opportunity to replead, whatever theory, whatever else they wanted to plead, summary judgment was granted in your favor.
Not exactly, Your Honor. What happened was the special exceptions were granted and an abatement to pleadings to allow a resolution of Graff versus Beard that was going to end based upon a trial setting. The trial setting then evaporated. We went forward with the summary judgment.
I'm confused about the state of the record with regards to the statement you made that the plaintiffs could not in good conscience plead that the liquor was provided by the Friesenhahn, because there's testimony that they in fact did not. And what is that testimony?
That's page 34 of Eric Johnson's deposition, an excerpt of which was part of the summary judgment proof at the trial court level.
Who's Eric Johnson?
He was the young man who accompanied the deceased to the party and was with her and watched her exit the party.
What did he say?
He says that the Friesenhahn's, my client, did not provide the liquor. He says that she brought her own alcohol, that she may have gotten some from some other third parties, and that as she was exiting the party, the Friesenhahn's, my client, were attempting to stop motor vehicles and take car keys away from intoxicated persons, and that the decedent drove around them and out the gate to her death. And the court's question has brought up, I think, some of the key distinctions. Again, if we're going to start, there are two premises here. One being, can there be social host liability? The other, can there be negligence per se liability? I want to be sure to have time to address the issue of negligence per se, but on the social host aspect of the case, this court has held that among adults there is no social host liability. Simply changing the individual status to that of a minor doesn't change the biggest issue, which is right to control. There still is no right to control. As this court said on page, I believe it was 9.
Well, as the Court of Appeals pointed out, it's illegal to serve minors alcohol in any amount. And so do you even get to right of control? Because they've already violated the law by providing alcohol to a minor in the first place.
Your Honor, that would be under the negligence per se argument. And my belief there is that it's also illegal as a minor to possess and consume the alcohol. So you have two equal actors with criminal culpability in that case. And if we're going to base a civil action upon criminal culpability, we've now moved into an area where we've got the injured party, in this case, unfortunately, deceased party, potentially deriving a civil benefit from having violated the law, possessing and consuming alcohol. Bearing in mind, this is not an innocent third-party case. I can see a distinction if we had all of the facts that the court asked and we had an innocent third party. I think we might have a different situation. There's a case out of Houston that talked a little bit about that. But in this specific case, we've got the person who was the injured party, deceased party, her estate would derive a civil benefit from being able to bring a cause of action based on her violation of the law.
Why isn't that handled under comparative negligence?
It could be, but again, we would have negligence per se. It would be the only negligence per se scenario. I've not been able to find another where the person seeking to take advantage of criminal liability to their own benefit is also a criminal actor. I guess basically I'm saying I think that the dual culpability should move us away from the negligence per se and should leave us strictly in the civil law with the social host issues. And following on with that, with just strictly the social host issues, as I started to say a moment ago, we've got all of the elements of social host that this court has not found. The only thing that has changed in this case is we have a minor, and then we do have the right to control, which Justice Cornyn asked about a distinction because of the violation of criminal law, which I think I've addressed. But in addition, in this case, we're not seeking to benefit an innocent third party or seeking to find a remedy for an innocent third party. It is the drinker herself who was involved.
It does look like the control issue goes away, though, because if you serve alcohol to an adult, which you're entitled to do, you can't control the adult. But if you serve alcohol to a minor, which you're not entitled to do, maybe you can't control the minor, but it doesn't matter if you hadn't served in the first place.
Your Honor, I don't completely disagree with that. On a general basis first, and then I want to answer as to the facts of this case as the record stands. On a general basis, we still don't have a right to control a minor simply because it's a minor. A parent certainly does, and the government certainly does to degrees, but I don't believe you and I do simply because that person's a minor. And the fact that we have served that person, there is a case out of Houston, I cannot pronounce the appellant's name, but the respondent is O'Brien. It's out of the Houston Court of Appeals, where a minor was served. And beyond even that point, car keys were taken away, more alcohol, and then later on, the adult in the case says, basically, I've changed my mind. Here's your car keys back. Get in your car. drive home drunk. What the Houston court did is not try to go social host liability with that, but say there's a situation where someone affirmatively created a dangerous condition, and a duty ought to arise out of that, as opposed to just the broader framework of failing to allow. Now, specifically in this case, to hone down on those facts, again, you say the right to control goes away, but as this court said in the Graff case, what level should the duty rise to? Does it include taking away car keys, taking possession of the automobile? That was particularly poignant words to me because the summary judgment proof establishes my clients, in fact, tried to do that and failed.
The argument on the other side, I know your evidence is that you didn't provide it, but if you had provided it, the argument on the other side is control and knowledge, which are the underpinnings of Graff, don't matter because you never should have given them the alcohol in the first place. You don't have to know. You don't have to be able to know. You don't have to be able to control. Just don't give them the alcohol. You can't do that with adults because they're entitled to it, and then knowledge and control issues arise, but they don't arise with minors.
Correct, Your Honor, and I think if we had an innocent third party was the one that was seeking to make that very argument, I would be hard-pressed to disagree, at least as strenuously as I am. But
if an adult actually affirmatively provided alcoholic beverages to, say, a 17-year-old, just to make it as clear as we can, then it's very difficult to make a Graff argument.
If it's an innocent third party. Now, if it's the 17-year-old themselves, who later then goes and becomes injured, then I think the
dual culpability.
Yes, sir.
But that doesn't mean necessarily there's no duty, does it? And just what I don't understand why the duty that you're willing to concede may exist if it was an innocent third party goes away when it's the as under the facts of this case, it's the illegal drinker who was hurt.
I guess it partially goes to foreseeability and cause and fact. The duty that I think goes away in part because the drinker themselves is a participant. We've got, and I'm not articulating it very well, but we've got a different level of foreseeability of what's liable to happen, where we have this person themselves, the minor who is committing the illegal act, participating in the act. We have a co-participant just among themselves. I think no duty arises. The reason the duty arises as to the third party.
But it's certainly, I mean, that's part of the risk of giving underage drinkers or anybody alcohol when they're intoxicated is that they'll kill other people, but certainly one of the risks is they'll kill themselves.
Well, Your Honor, then in that case, I think what the court would be saying is that if we take away duty and take away right to control as issues, basically we've created strict liability upon the providing of the alcohol. And that, I think, is just too stringent a standard because that allows no factual interpretation whatsoever. If we had created strict liability strictly by assuming the court were to be 17 and I hand you alcohol, I fixed my liability.
It's not strict liability, but negligence per se.
It would be a form of negligence per se, but it wouldn't even permit a comparative argument, I don't believe, at that point. If we're saying the mere providing, because the drinker is a minor, the mere providing of that alcohol then forecloses the need to find duty, forecloses the need to address right to control, establishes conclusively all issues of foreseeability. That rings of strict liability at that point, and none of these other issues, such as the culpability of the drinker themselves, that this court says we should continually focus on.
Let me see if I can summarize your argument. You're saying that even if the Friesen Haas had provided liquor to the minor, who is now deceased, that Graff versus Beard controls this case and says there's no liability.
Yes, Your Honor. To that point, because of no duty, lack of control.
All right. How does the statute, how do we analyze the statute, 106?
That it's illegal to provide alcohol to a minor.
Yes.
The way that has to be looked at is that is, in fact, a criminal violation to provide alcohol to the minor. It is likewise a criminal violation to possess and consume it by the minor. To excuse the minor's criminal conduct to allow the minor to assert a civil claim under a negligence per se theory, I think is going to an extreme that should not be permitted. The way that ought to be handled.
Shouldn't it just be comparative?
Why couldn't there be comparative causation?
There would have to be, there could, Your Honor, but it would have to also then, I think, include an analysis of comparative criminality. I can't get past the point that they were, then we're saying they're both negligent per se, and then we're you're saying just compare the acts themselves with respect to causation. Again, my problem with that is that the plaintiff or the decedent in this case has committed a criminal act and is benefiting from the ramifications of the criminal act.
In the Sewell case, and I can't remember the whole style of the case, where the we applied the dram shop act to a guy who'd gone to a bar and I think had four pitchers of beer and drove into a telephone pole on the way home. We said under our statutory construction, the dram shop act, that his heirs had a cause of action against the commercial provider for serving an obviously intoxicated driver, although his bad acts had to be compared against the provider's bad acts under a comparative negligence analysis. Why wouldn't that apply?
I think it wouldn't apply because we hold commercial establishments that profit financially from serving alcohol to a higher standard, and the court's own recitation of that standard added some elements. Obviously intoxicated, there's things about it, the words may not be precisely right, but a reasonable and prudent provider of alcohol, a professional at that, should recognize those things and is in a superior position to prevent those acts from occurring.
Why wouldn't we say that an adult is in a superior position to a minor in terms of of knowing the law and knowing the consequences of serving alcohol to someone that the state has made a policy choice should not have it. And it's a duty that we all share to see that they don't have it.
Your Honor, I agree that that is correct, but still, it takes it to the point that the difference being the other party is also aware and knowing, and the adult when consuming alcohol is not violating the law as the minor is in that point. I think that that becomes a valid distinction if we're going to base civil liability upon a criminal violation.
I have a question for you about a case that you labeled as the O'Brien case out of Houston.
Yes, Your Honor.
I looked in your brief and didn't find that. Would you later provide us a case site for that?
I can do that right now, Your Honor. I just can't pronounce the plaintiff's name. Okay. It's 909 Southwest 2nd 236, and I think it's Bennett. Toilias, V-E-N-E-T-O-U-L-I-A-S, but it's 909 2nd 236, and that's the case I addressed where the alcohol was provided, the keys taken away, then the person pushed in the car. The court did not find a social host duty, but found a duty not to affirmatively create the situation.
Yeah, and that's my question for you. The way you said it the first time, you said that the court said that the defendant in that case affirmatively created a dangerous condition.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why would it not be affirmatively creating a dangerous condition when adults host a party for minors where they say, BYOB, we are not going to provide you alcohol, but we are going to provide the place, the environment, the atmosphere for you to come here and get drunk and then drive home?
First off, Your Honor, that's not the facts of this case. But as a general proposition of law, that still does not rise to the level of affirmative creation in the case that I cited. I realize it's a matter of degree. It does potentially create a dangerous situation. Limited to the facts of the O'Brien case, the facts were a great deal more egregious. And again, I would point out in this case, the adults did not host the party. The first part of the court's hypothetical is inapplicable here.
But the adults knew about the party.
After it started.
Okay.
After it started, and as I've said on page 39 of Mr. Johnson's deposition, which is part of the summary judgment record, they attempted to stop intoxicated people, adults and minors both, from leaving their party, from leaving their premises. They were taking car keys. At the time they were taking car keys, the decedent went around, out, and died shortly thereafter.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jim. Board is ready to hear our argument from the respondent.
May I please report, Mr. Donald Moss, this is an argument for the respondent.
May it please this honorable court, although ordinarily facts may not be discussed overly before the court, I'll give a brief encapsulation of the operative facts of this case. I differ with my esteemed colleague in that I'm also hampered by the fact the record can't be developed fully because procedurally we couldn't plead, but I'll get to that in a minute. The operative facts of this case are quite simple. This was a rural setting in East Bear County, approximately 160 acres, homestead of the Friesenheim family. Todd Friesenheim, the son, invited some people over to BYOB party. They were all high schoolers. Depending on whose opinion you want to believe, there were either 75 or 150 children here, all minors, the great majority, very few adults other than Friesenheims, if any. Alcohol was freely consumed in the past for a period of time. The record's clear. Mr. Friesenheim, the father, mingled amongst the youngsters drinking alcohol. The evidence is not so clear as to Mrs. Friesenheim. The evidence is clear Todd Friesenheim was the instigator, along with three other boys, of this party. This was not necessarily the first party there. It was a BYOB party for high school kids. It was Friday night football BYOB party. That is the basic scenario. This is not mom and pop invited somebody's high school buddy and he drank a beer at the barbecue.
How about Eric Johnson's testimony that Friesenheim did not provide the alcohol to the minor?
That was to his knowledge. Again, Your Honor, there were 75 to 150 people here.
Is there anything to controvert or to conflict with that? Did anybody say that Friesenheim provided the alcohol?
On the present state of the record, I cannot tell the score that there's firsthand knowledge that they handed my deceased client a drink. No, sir.
And if your theory, your BYOB theory is right, it wouldn't make any sense if they did.
No, sir. Well, there is evidence for Mr. Johnson, who is an objective witness in the sense that he's not a party plaintiff or defendant, and he was in her presence, Sabrina Ryan's presence for some time, that alcohol was freely exchanged amongst the youngsters, including some youngsters giving Sabrina, I believe, some Budweiser beer.
Let's assume that the evidence is that the Friesenheims, the adults, owners of the property, did not provide alcohol to any of the minors. They didn't hand them a beer. They didn't bring the beer to be distributed. There could be no argument made whatsoever that they provided alcohol to the minors. What duty is it that you are saying should exist on the part of these homeowners?
If I can answer, I don't mean to answer obtusely, but this may not be characterized in certain ways as a social host case. I think this court called Graff a social host case differentiated from the dram shop, El Chico, in those cases, commercial vendors. There is no right for someone under Texas Alcohol Beverage Code. There's no right for a minor to possess beer. There's no right to furnish a beer to or alcohol to a minor unless that's your child or your legal guardian in their presence. So they provided this dangerous condition, analogous to longstanding Texas law on the attractive nuisance. These are children. This is not true pari material. These aren't people of equal standing. These are adults versus teenagers. Their perception and their responsibility is not pari material. They invited these people over to, for alcohol.
Providing the opportunity to drink.
Well, sir, it's also our position in support of the Fourth Court of Appeals decision that TABC code, which I believe is section 106.045 and 6, which had to do with possession, consumption, and providing.
Doesn't that deal with criminal penalties, though?
Well, my point is, Your Honor, that we argue the Friesenheims, one, two, or all three of them, are guilty on the law of parties. Technically, we think they're guilty of a misdemeanor, i.e.
But under 106, they have to have provided the alcohol, and there is no evidence that they provided the alcohol.
If the court means literally hand a person a drink, I would have to answer that's correct. We're not sure. The record wasn't fully developed because procedurally we got into special exceptions and summary judgment. But getting back to the argument of the Penal Code 7.02, criminal responsibility to act another, if a person with requisite intent aids, assists, encourages an offense, then they're guilty of that offense too.
And that's criminal liability. How do you make the jump from criminal liability to civil liability?
Because it's a violation of statute triggering negligence per se. Sabrina Ryan is in a protected class. Minors can't drink unless they're in the presence of their parents. We had 75 to 150 minors drinking. They weren't, except for Todd Friesenheim, they were not in the presence of the parents. They encouraged assistance. They invited people over to drink on their premises. If that's not encouraging the violation of possession and consumption of alcohol by minors, I submit it doesn't exist.
does that run headlong into Mr. Causland's argument that Stephen and Sandra Ryan are co-participants in this criminal offense that their daughter did because they permitted her to go to this party, which was BYOB, and so therefore they ought to be stopped from bringing this claim on behalf of the estate because you've got dual participants. You've got the parents of Todd who had a beer party, you've got the parents of Sabrina who allowed her to go to a beer party, and so we ought to just quit.
Yes, sir. If I understood Mr. Crossland's point, he was attaching the criminal liability to Sabrina, i.e. a participant in a criminal act.
But under the law of parties, you want to attach the Friesenhans to the environment that permitted the drinking. So I'm saying under the law of parties, that would also bring Stephen and Sandra in, wouldn't it? The parents of Sabrina?
Yes, Your Honor. The deposition testimony in this case is that they just knew she was going to a party. They didn't know alcohol would be there. But she was going to a party.
Was discovery complete?
No, ma'am.
Todd Friesenhahn invited these kids to the Friesenhahn's property,
yes, sir.
Is that correct?
It was around Judson High School, and everybody, quote, knew, and everybody talked about it.
And there's no evidence that Mr. and Mrs. Friesenhahn tendered that invitation, but they were present. Is that correct? Or is it?
It was one of the two, and I can't recall, Your Honor, testified in deposition that they knew Todd was coming over with four friends. Later, because word had gotten around, 75 to 150 people showed up. Mr. Friesenhahn was down there mixing and mingling with the kids as they were drinking. So
how long did the mixing and mingling go on?
I think for different estimates of 45 minutes to a couple hours.
I guess what I'm getting at is if Mr. and Mrs. Friesenhahn objected to minors drinking on their property, were they in a position, is there any evidence that they were in a position to stop it?
I think under proper conditions they could have excluded the children. To be fair to petitioners from the limited discovery we have, Mrs. Friesenhahn testified she didn't know about it except for Todd's friends coming over. Mr. Friesenhahn, by Mr. Johnson's deposition, was down there walking amongst the kids and drinking and having a good time. They were playing music and it was a big party. And Todd was down there too with his friends and the 7,550 kids drinking and having a good time too. It was a beer bust.
What was the testimony with regards to their efforts to keep take keys from kids and keep kids from leaving the premises?
That testimony, as I recall, and I have differed with counsel, did not come from Mr. Johnson. I think Mrs. Friesenhahn testified that she went to the gate and tried to take bottles from people as they were leaving. I don't recall an extensive testimony of any control as to determine whether or not someone's intoxicated.
Any testimony there about keys, taking keys, trying to take keys away?
Certainly not from Sabrina Ryan.
I'm talking about the Friesenhahn. Their efforts to take keys away from drivers they knew were inebriated.
Your Honor, I don't recall an instance that where keys were taken. I recall testimony that they took some bottles or told kids don't take your bottles on the road. There was some general indication TABC was, quote, looking for this party, and because it heard about it.
Is there any evidence that Todd actually provided alcohol to anyone at the party?
Yes, but again, I cannot say that Todd handed Sabrina Ryan an alcoholic beverage.
Let me go back to my initial question to you. That is, what duty is it that you are asking us to create? The way I wrote down some of your comments, you're asking us to create a common law duty upon homeowners or not to encourage the consumption of alcohol.
Well, Your Honor, in retrospect, as I thought about this case, and since I could never decipher the index for TJ 3rd, I went back to TJ 2nd and read up on general liability, and there's a pattern dating back decades of special attention to children. Now, it's evolved from premise liability, where it was not on adults, onto instructions for 10 years and so forth. I'm not so sure I'm asking the court to create something that's brand new. I would say this is not a social host duty case because social host is just a term. You don't have a right to invite children over who are going to drink and violate the law. There's no such, it's not a social gathering. That's an illegal gathering. So I'm asking the court to enforce what is the law, the application of new facts, admittedly, at least before this court, I think. But it's simply saying if I would like the court to create a kind of law duty in the sense of recognizing that you cannot encourage violation of law and be scot-free.
What about the minor? Is there a difference when a minor provides alcohol to another minor?
Your Honor, I think technically all of the minors that provided any alcohol could be part of the defendant. They simply were not for tactical reasons. There were 150 people keep track of.
But from a broader perspective of the law, should there be a different rule of law?
I don't think so.
Why not?
It's an offense for a minor to possess alcohol, period. So if you can't possess it, how can you possess it to hand it to somebody? Plus, that's a furnished violation, too, I think, under 106.06.
So Sabrina was violating the law when she consumed the alcohol. She either brought herself or somebody gave her.
That's correct. She was in violation of law. She was possessing and consuming alcoholic beverages. But again, I had circled that Sewell case. It's behind 202 in the TABC code. This court held this first party recovery under the dram shop. A drunk man sitting in a bar went out and hit the tray and gave him some recovery. Now, it might have been under instructions to the jury on comparative, but certainly this is not a precedent setting in that regard.
Would you tell me what you think the court meant when it said, in connection with the 106 discussion, furthermore, the social host may control the minor with whom there is a special relationship analogous to that of parent-child? Which it seemed to be one of the bases for holding the Friesenhans liable, at least by the San Antonio courts.
Well, Your Honor, I submit the rationale is similar to that Otis Engineering case, which on its face is a workers' compensation case. However, as I understand the court's...
They didn't cite Otis. They cited Phillips and De Luna.
Those are provision or control cases, Judge. Providing, I don't think the TABC code provides for a liberal interpretation. I don't think the term providing as such means you have literally handing of one to another. In any event, 04 and 05, possession and consumption, certainly Todd Friesenhahn, Mr. Friesenhahn, were parties under 702 of the Penal Code, aid, assist, and encourage. Had they not invited people to BYOB, my client would probably well be alive today. Certainly would not have been killed that night.
Now that also leaves out what you've already said, that you think that she was provided alcohol by other minors, so that might have still happened even if she had not brought her own. Isn't that true?
It would not happen on those premises, though, Your Honor.
Well, of course, you could also say if she hadn't gone to the party, period, then that wouldn't happen. There's a lot of ifs and buts.
Yes, sir.
And so what's the special relationship that the court based their part of their opinion on?
Well, I would submit there is the special relationship is not certainly not parents patriae, it's not parent-child, but I submit that if you're inviting a minor onto your premise in which you know the minor's going to be violating the law, i.e. consuming alcohol, possessing alcohol, that you are creating a dangerous condition. And leaving the statute aside, having created that dangerous condition, I suggest that you should have liability for it.
So your argument is really more akin to the Houston case.
Actually, I think the Houston case, Your Honor, is in support of our position.
Okay, thank you.
Is there evidence that Sabrina was intoxicated at the time of her death?
Yes, sir. The autopsy, she had a one-car rollover, and the autopsy showed a level well in excess of the legal limit of .010, and that was the cause of death, was the car collision. And it wasn't, excuse me, not a collision, one car rolled.
If her parents knew that she was drinking, do you contend that her parents should not also be held liable?
If her parents, assume this court holds as a cause of action, it may well hold, a trial court may well hold, some comparative type instruction might attach to the parent. Their right really to recover is largely derivative of Sabrina Ryan's. Under the wrong. There's the common law negligence, which you state brought, and the statutory wrongful death at one time.
And that's because they're negligent or because they're in violation of the statute or both?
Both, sir.
So that every parent who knows his child is drinking is in violation of the statute?
No, sir. Not necessarily.
A lot of criminals walk around.
Well, if you know your child's drinking and you haven't encouraged, aided, assisted, or abetted, you're not a party to the offense. Your child is an actor, but you are not.
What would be the difference, though, for the Friesenhans? If they knew these kids were drinking but didn't do anything to aid, assist, or abet?
Well, they did. They had the invitations, Your Honor. They had music out there. People were socializing, hand beer. Mr. Friesenheil was mingling amongst minors drinking. There's some indication this was not the first party of this nature out there. It was very sizable.
Whose party was it? His son's or Mr. Friesenheil's party?
Well, it was the son's party sanctioned by the parents, as I recall the testimony. In other words, they knew what was going to happen. Before the fourth court argument, I read the graph over and over until my eyes were glazing over, trying to truly understand. And at one point, footnote 2 on jump page 919, I noted that the court said that this is not the case involving minors. It is not a social host case in that regard. I don't think this court is going to establish there's a social host case where you're violating the law. You're not a social host. You're violating the law besides being negligent. You can't invite minors over your house to drink. I mean, I don't think you can create that as a social host doctrine. It's clearly distinguishable, I think, Your Honor. You're honest from Greg.
Well, the Court of Appeals, whose judgment and opinion you want us to affirm, treats this as a social host case.
Yes, sir, but again, that may be just terminology. What's underlying and what is important are long-standing rules and practices of negligence.
The Court of Appeals says under the pled facts, a jury could find the Friesenheils as adult social host, allowed invitations to a beer party, etc., and that's the basis of the liability.
Well, yes, sir, I'm not going to argue with you, sir, or Justice Rickoff on his terminology. But I'm trying to explain my perception underlying principles of law distinguish and differentiates this case from Graff. On the procedural points, the reason there were amendments against there were some commercial vendor defendants who were severed out later. There was no orders saying we couldn't amend, and so we amended as per the special exceptions. This hearing where we were precluded from amending our petition was only between the Friesenheims and the Ryans. The only participants in that hearing were only pertaining to those two parties.
Is there any basis in fact for you to replead that the Friesenheims provided alcohol?
There's enough to plead, Your Honor, subject to further discovery and proof.
How long had the case been pending at the time the summary judgment was granted?
I think a year, well, certainly a year, maybe two. I don't honestly recall. It's been so long in the system that the exact timetables are hard to recall. But the order precluded us from any. I asked. I said, may I have 60 days or at least 30, which I thought he'd give me to replead. And he said, no sooner than 25 days before trial and no later than 8. Now, you know, whether one likes that order or not, that's the order we were under in our pleadings with Friesenheim.
Mr. Johnson's affidavit, that at least offensively says that the adult Friesenheims didn't provide Sabrina the alcohol. Who provided that affidavit and who filed it? How did it get in the court record?
I think that may be an excerpt from a deposition.
And regardless of whether you were permitted time to replead or not, would you not have a burden to go forward in responding to that deposition excerpt to create a fact issue on whether or not the Friesenheims provided the alcohol?
Well, I submit, Your Honor, that the word provided is broader based than under the mandated liberal interpretation of TABC code, which is in the three provisions. And they provided, they created the atmosphere. They have a part of the invitations. They created their own atmosphere. Dangerous condition.
So it's your point that the affidavit does not set up as a matter of law. I mean, it doesn't set up as a conclusive fact that the Friesenheims didn't hand deliver the alcohol to Sabrina. And even if it did do that, you're saying that the duty is broader than that. I mean, just merely having the place where the party is knowing about it is the same thing as providing. So.
Well, that's probably a fair statement, Judge, as I perceive what you're saying.
Your argument would apply equally if she were 19 or not.
It would apply equally if she were 19 to the extent it was a violation of law when you talk about not strict liability but negligence per se and consequential damages.
The special care argument that you've made gets hard to make in this area where for some purposes you're a minor and for other purposes you're not.
Yes, sir, but clearly here it is a minor. Clearly it's a violation to ABC besides the common law arguments. And I think either way it's a two-way street for recovery.
May I ask you one more question?
Yes,
on the 106 claim, your trial petition, I think, was your third, or at least the petition that was filed, was third amended. And it doesn't appear that there's any direct allegation that comes close to being a 106 claim against the Friedenhans, although there's specific were the same allegations against these third parties. And the issue's been made about you didn't have the opportunity to amend to meet special exceptions that had been granted, which was the thrust of that order. Can you make that same argument on your 106 situation where you never pleaded it in the first place? And it already pleaded the same claim or against commercial providers, SAMs and so forth.
That was subsequent, Your Honor, to the court order on the Friesenheim special exception.
Well, but that's a August 92 pleading, which was after this order was entered, wasn't it?
Yes, sir, but we were precluded from amending in the court order until a window of 25 days, 84
to 5. But you could still raise it in your answer to their summary judgment if you do that. They assert that that argument was not made until oral argument before the Court of Appeals. Is that correct?
I believe that's assertion, but when you talk about a violation of statute, Your Honor, if I understand the law, you're talking about a form of common law negligence. In other words, a duty, breach of duty, a protected class, i.e. minor, and therefore the consequential damage. So when you talk about violating a statute, you're really talking just about an expansion of the common law from the ordinary negligence common law.
Well, but it's been pointed out by earlier questions, the results are different because it's negligent per se. And my question is, there's no specific claim of negligence per se against the Friedenhans in your live petition as there were against these other parties. And at the time they heard the summary judgment, you would have had the opportunity to meet that by raising that in your response. Did you raise it in your response to the summary judgment?
Well, I don't recall if that was raised that way. I did ask that it be a beta type of replete. I did ask for time to replete, which I understood is what you do in that situation. I was still in court order not to amend. So I asked legal court to amend.
So if I understand your answer, your response to their summary judgment contained no answer to the effect that they likewise were liable per se because they were in violation of 106.6.
That would have been, in effect, Your Honor, repleting, which I was precluded from. I did ask for time to replete.
You answered my question. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Justice Heck, your question regarding a 19-year-old has been addressed by the title court. The case of Colin Smith versus Margaret Merritt, and I do not have the Southwest site. Apparently, it's too recent. It's come out of my computer. But in that case, the Tyler court decided that although the 19-year-old was a minor,
it's pending, counsel.
Oh, okay. I don't need to say any more about that case. But I wanted to point that out. That issue has been addressed.
Mr. Crossan, whether or not we would decide that the violation of the Alcoholic Beverage Code would give rise to a cause of action for negligence per se, we still have to consider whether there ought to be a common law duty in this context, do we not?
Yes, Your Honor.
And would you explain to me if the legislature has decided as a matter of public policy that it is bad for people under the age of 18 to drink and has created criminal liability for serving people under the age of 18, why shouldn't the civil law reinforce that attempt to deter that kind of conduct?
To deter underage drinking?
Correct.
The very way the civil law can do that is by not finding a duty. Because if a duty is found in this type of circumstance, a social host duty to a minor, then this court and the law will defeat that social purpose by taking the responsibility away from the drinker and under facts like we have here, even away from the people who actually provided the alcohol and take it yet one step further back. And
well,
defeat that goal.
I presume one thing that occurred to the legislature in making underage drinking illegal is the lessened ability of a minor to determine the effects of alcohol. The Court of Appeals mentioned that in its opinion. So are we really comparing apples and apples, or is...
Yes, sir, because there are other cases, and I believe one out of this court, where with respect to alcohol manufacturers warning on the danger of alcohol, that minors are not presumed to have this lesser knowledge and are presumed to be possessed of the same knowledge the rest of us have of the effects of alcohol. So I think we still are comparing apples.
But under your theory of this case, an adult could serve all the alcohol that the minor was willing to drink with civil impunity.
No, sir. I think that alcohol can be served without social host liability. The court has takes it a step further to the point of affirmatively creating a situation such as out of the Houston case, where there are more egregious facts, where not a social host situation is created, where the mere serving of the alcohol creates the liability, but other facts create. Clearly, I do believe that there's a fact situation where, as this court suggested, if alcohol is served with impunity, and just to take the hypothetical a step further, the minor is clearly intoxicated, leaves, gets in the car, the adult does nothing. I think there was a duty to act affirmatively there. I don't think it's a social host duty, and while it's a very fine line, I think it's there.
How would you classify it?
A duty having affirmatively created the dangerous condition, the duty to act, as opposed to passively having allowed it to exist. Justice Gonzalez, I mixed up a little bit on the key issue and also to respond to Justice Enoch a little bit. Eric Johnson is not an affidavit. It was a deposition at which Mr. Mock attended and cross-examined, done in September of 1991, more than a year after the case was filed, more than a year before the motion for summary judgment was granted. There was full opportunity to cross-examine. The key testimony was that Eric Johnson said he took the keys at one point from the deceased. The Friesenhans did not. He was asked, what were they being the Friesenhans? Friesenhans were at the gate, I believe so. What were they trying to do? I believe they were stopping people that had been intoxicated or had been drinking from driving home. So the key part, I don't want to mislead the court, the key part was in a different area, but they were trying to stop people from going home. Just again to finish.
How did she slip around?
Well, that's even here too. She took off pretty fast. A car came in, went off to the side, and she ran somebody off the road. Otherwise, it would have been a wreck. And she just a quick stop and took off again. Do you know if the Friesenhans tried to stop her or tried to talk to her? No, I don't know. Do you know if they could have under the circumstances? I don't believe they could have. I really don't. Why is that? Just the way she went through. I mean, you know, if they... And he goes on from there, but they were there. Again, just to close, this would be a case where we do not have an innocent third party, we do not have a right to control, we do have a violator of the law, and a social host duty under these facts would be creating a duty to protect the deceased, not only from herself, but from her peers. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jim. The third argument...